This is ITE, Module 6, Part 2. And this is a second part of a laptop module. Somebody want to go get Gary? Make sure he can move.
I can get him.
Alright, cool. Gary's doing it. Alright. Now, if I have warned you about spell checking, or Sean has warned you about spell checking. Oh, there he is. Cool. That was your last warning. You are now at module 6/7. You really need to work on spell checking your documents, or figuring out a way to spell check your documents if you haven't and thought, oh, it's okay, I'll just get by. We are going to start sending your documents back to you for spell checking, and we really don't want to do that. So, if you've been warned about spell checking, that is something you're going to need to really actually make a good effort to do, because we basically
give
just
your labs a
read
through before you submit them. Okay, just before you hit that save and send it, just give it one more listen. Some of the things I hear are just teeny tiny typos that I think if you were to just listen to it one more time, you'd be like, oh yeah, that, okay.
We don't want to be, you know, really really pedantic about this, and we won't, you know, we won't be ridiculous, but hey guys, I think that most of us are here because we want to get jobs. And if we want to get jobs, we need to learn how to format documents correctly and spell check and make things look nice, or we will get laughed at and we will keep sitting at home. So let's work on spell checking if we haven't put effort into it, and that would just be great.
Another hint, too, is if you're getting a lot of misspells on computer terms because they're not in your dictionary, add them. And then those misspells will go away. Making sure, of course, that you've spelt the words correctly before you do it.
Yep, I have a story.
I've actually added some students' names because I got sick of Thunderbird yelling at me. But
mine, probably.
Oh, yeah, your last name it really hates.
I have a story.
I know exactly which story.
Yes, that I experienced today. And you know what? I don't know if this person is bright or not, but I'm thinking that they're not. I opened an application, and this is just a prejudgment that I made, honestly. And I made it because of their writing style. I opened an application up, I read it, and they spelled the country that they lived in wrong.
Canada.
Canada. They spelled Canada wrong.
How do you spell that wrong?
Well,
apparently they managed.
It's pretty easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And,
I was basically ready to just tell this person no, that they were not going to be a part of our course. I didn't believe their literacy skills were good enough. And that basically we couldn't accept them. I did speak to them. And actually, this person has quite a bit of good of computer experience, and is probably actually a good fit for the course they want to take. But I sat down and I said, look, you're going to need to work on spell checking, you know, and cleaning up your grammar and, you know, all this stuff. And they're like, but I spell checked twice. And I just pointed out that they spelled Canada wrong. And they said, how could that be? Oh, maybe I didn't have my Zoom text on in the background or whatever. And I'm just like, look, you know, people are going to judge you on that, and you're really going to need to work on it. And yeah, I judged this person and said, no, we can't have them in our course. Actually, they'll be fine. But if I would have just written an email back and not interviewed them, they wouldn't have gotten a course. So
I actually had an experience
mindful.
I was working with a student, and they were working on a PowerPoint, and they thought to make the PowerPoint more readable, they would write everything in uppercase, which first of all looks awful, but second of all meant that the spelling errors that I could tell were there were not being caught because the spell check was set to ignore things in all uppercase, which is normally what you'd want for acronyms.
Because it thinks it's abbreviations.
Because yeah. Normally that's what you'd want. So what may have happened is this person's caps lock may have been on when they misspelled Canada.
No,
and
I don't
the
think
spell
so.
Checker wouldn't. Well, but it's a possibility.
Yeah, it can be, actually.
It's another possibility.
Because I had to look on the Braille display.
Okay, but it is a possibility, and I've seen
yeah,
it happen.
Oh, absolutely.
I've done it.
Yeah, because I had to take a second look at that application and actually read it with the braille display. It was that
I'm sure.
bad.
How'd they spell it? How'd they spell Canada?
Canida.
It burns.
That's phonetic. Canada.
Canada.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good thing they didn't put Canada.
Well, then yeah. I would have had to adjust.
Then you'd have thought they were being funny, but you'd have to.
No.
Yeah. We also had someone who will remain nameless, but because of a spell checking error, we got lots of hard drive patricians instead of partitions.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
So you do have to be careful. I thought that's the story you were going to tell first.
No, I wasn't going to tell about the patricians.
And that's why I chuckled.
Oh, there was one that actually had something to do with wanting a man, was actually what it came out to. I think they wanted something else, and I can't remember what it was, but it was hilarious. Like, you may want to
yeah,
that
we can't help
that.
Tall, dark, and handsome?
I don't know what type
well,
of man I don't know what type of
we
a
can't
man
help
it was,
you find those.
But I don't think they were looking for that. Alright. Did we talk about devices? Or safely removing devices? I don't think we did. I don't remember reading.
Are there any questions about... Are there any questions about labs, outstanding anythings?
Yeah. Sorry to rouse on you guys again. I really don't want to do this, as I said, but...
To be honest, there's nothing worse than reading crummy labs that students have submitted, and it really shows that you haven't put the time in to actually spell check them, and they sound horrible with eloquence. And we've already got enough of your labs to grade without having to try and figure out what you really meant. Because some of them are completely unreadable.
Okay, I'm done. Let's hope that we don't have to have this conversation again. And yeah, we are really trying to help you guys out so that you can get jobs in the industry and not look like unkempt buffoons. All right. Any questions on labs?
Yes, I'm still grading and almost getting caught up. I just got a whole
That's
bunch
fine.
Today. So, but good work. Guys, the labs we're getting in are, for the most part, pretty awesome, which is good. And I realize Yay. There's a lot of them in Chapter 5, and you guys are doing great.
And for those who have finished your labs, you get at least a week off, depending on how long this lecture takes. Maybe, and probably two. So you won't have anything that you have to do. Exams will go up after class. The NetAcad site threw a tantrum last weekend and did something to all our exams. You couldn't see them, but we could. And
Oh, really? Is that what happened?
Yeah. I was waiting for that to settle itself down. Yesterday,
wow.
I couldn't get in to NetAcad at all. Today, I can. And I gave someone a chance to retake an exam that they need to retake. And now we are ready for you guys to have your exams activated. So that will happen right after class. You'll have them active for a week. And you'll
oh,
be
now
able to
I feel bad because we couldn't figure out what happened with
well,
those.
I realized it and then I couldn't get in. So I just was going to wait until they expired to go in and fix it because NetAcad was being flaky and unstable and I didn't want anybody to take exams for a couple of days in case it decided
yeah.
to chuck another one, which it looks like it's all sorted and resolved now. So there you go. Okay. Any
we
other
would like
questions,
to say
comments?
That we have no control over NetAcad. Sometimes we wish we did, but then again, we don't.
Good, but we don't. Sorry, guys. Questions, comments, concerns, any of that? Alright then. Okay. We talked about hot swappable versus non-hot swappable. And now we're going to talk about how to remove a hot swappable device. You left-click the Safely Remove Hardware icon in the Windows System Tray to ensure that the device is not in use. Left-click the device that you want to remove. A message pops up to tell you that it is safe to remove the device. Remove the hot swappable device from the laptop. If you right-click Safely Remove Hardware, you will have to deal with a dialog rather than a simple menu. With the JAWS Insert F11 from the System Tray dialog box, has right-click as the default button. Left-click is easier. Laptops can access the internet and other devices in many ways, including Ethernet, wireless Ethernet, modems, Bluetooth, infrared, and cellular WAN. To use Ethernet, plug the RJ45 cable into the computer. As easy as that. If the internet does not work right away, you will need to configure IP settings. We will talk more about that in Module 8. These are likely on the test, so we're going to briefly go over the path, which we're going to cover in Module 8. This chapter gives details in the notes, so please have a look if you want a general idea. Just have a look anyway, because you read the chapter, didn't you? Alright, wireless NICs can be built in or be added as external PC or express cards. They also can be USBs. IP information is configured in exactly the same way you configure it on a wired NIC. Again, we're going to be back on this in Module 8, or you find the path in the notes. Modem installation and configuration steps. Make sure the modem is installed and turned on if an external modem is attached. Attach a phone cable from the wall outlet to the appropriate RJ11 modem port. Use the Install New Modem wizard to add the modem. Under Windows XP, this is Start Control Panel, Phone and Modem Options. Specify the dialing information for your location. Click OK. The Add Hardware wizard starts. Modem, Add, Next. Add Hardware wizard installs the device. Finish. You've got stuff for Windows Vista and 7. I'm not going to read it to you because you can do that yourself. And we've got stuff for Windows 7 as well. Any questions on modems? You're really not going to do too much of this unless you're in a really remote area.
Good idea to disable call waiting, and usually they'll have an option where you can add *70, comma to the dialing prefix. You usually want to do that because if a call comes in and someone, sometimes the modem connection can go bang, and that used to happen a lot.
Warning, American specific code. If you're in another country, it is not *70.
That's true. I forgot.
Did they bring my Coke?
The staff hasn't even
done it. Oh, okay, cool. I wasn't sure I was out. Alright. Any other questions on modems? Alright. Bluetooth. Windows activates it by default, you hope. To turn it on or off, look for a switch on the laptop, the FN key combination, or an area on the touch strip if one exists. Please don't buy a touch strip that allows you to turn on and off Bluetooth and wireless if you can help it. This will get real annoying real fast. Bluetooth should be enabled in the BIOS if it isn't already, but it likely is. Check this if it isn't working and you know the computer has Bluetooth capability. Ensure the device you wish to use is switched on and in discovery or discoverable mode. This is important because when a device is switched on, it isn't necessarily in discoverable mode. So you might have a little button you have to press or a key sequence on the device that you have to press. So if you turn it on and your computer can't find it, that is possibly why. Check the manual or other documentation that came with the device for details on how it's done. The Bluetooth wizard should be used to find and connect with discoverable devices in range of your computer. You've got paths. You can read all about them in the notes. One thing I'll say is that Windows 7 and Vista can give you codes. If you have a Braille display, this is all right. You have to be quick. If not, you click the back button and you use JAWS to tell it that you want to use your own code. And you can do that.
Yeah, some it's devices also worth mentioning. You can't actually put in
yeah,
your own
you can't
code.
Put
some Braille
code
displays have
devices.
A fixed code.
Yeah. In addition to the wizard, you have tabs that can to configure a device that is already set up. The device tab add, removes, or lets you examine properties for devices, including COM ports. This is really important for Braille displays because JAWS is going to want to know this information. The option tabs lets you control how devices are discovered and connect to your machines. It's on the COM port tab, which is where you set up incoming and outgoing serial ports. Finally, the hardware tab shows information about the Bluetooth devices on your computer. I've seen COM ports also be listed in the options area, so it can be in either place, depending on if it has COM ports to configure. Infrared installation and configuration requires infrared to be turned on in BIOS, just as Bluetooth does. Usually this is already done and you don't have to worry about it, but if you can't get it to work and you think it should be on, check the BIOS. You're going to turn on your device with infrared, point its transceiver at the port on the laptop. They should be about 1 meter apart because that's about all you can get. The port feels like a small rectangular or oval-shaped window, and it's very smooth. Infrared ports you will be able to feel. If the ports are lined up correctly, an icon will appear on the taskbar, and you'll hear a weird sound play, and it will show you that it's configured. It makes a very strange sound. Hi! Hey, no problem. We've got soda. Yay! Thank you. Click this icon to bring up the infrared dialog box. In Windows XP and Vista, this dialog can also be accessed in the control panel. You can configure how you get notifications about connections and how files are transferred, how images are transferred from a camera, and the hardware tab shows you the port and hardware itself. An external infrared transceiver can be connected via serial or USB if your laptop does not have one and you need one. Why? Remember that infrared is line of sight, so linking them up is important. Is important. Okay.
There is a program called Lurk, which also has a port for Windows that allows you to control televisions, video recorders, set-top boxes, and any other thing that talks infrared from your laptop.
Okay, now that's pretty cool.
Apparently they were hacking Furbies that way, too.
No, that's not actually true.
They were trying to.
No, it wasn't possible. I actually did all the research when I owned a Furby.
Oh.
Sorry.
Okay. There should be no obstructions in the way. You don't want your big teddy bear between you and your computer and the infrared device. Even though it's cute and cuddly, it's going to cut off your infrared. Infrared is the same technology used to control your TV with the remote. Sometimes you need to point it very accurately, which is hard for us to do sometimes. Or you can be like me, pick it up, sit there, aim the wrong end at the TV for about 30 seconds, and wonder why it doesn't work, and then realize it and turn it around.
We've all done that.
All the time. If a laptop has a cellular WAN technology built in, no additional configuration should be necessary to make it work. A switch or other toggles should be available if the connection is not active. Make sure cellular WAN is enabled. Go ahead. Oh, somebody keyed up. In BIOS. The following seems to apply to external broadband cards or dongles. Install the manufacturer's broadband card, utility software. Mobile partner is accessible, which is what a lot of the Huawei things come with. You do have to do some JAWS cursoring to get it to work, but it does, and once you get it going, you have no issue, so that's absolutely fine. Use the utility software to manage the network connection. The cellular WAN utility software can be located in the taskbar or in start programs. Yeah, usually when it's open, it usually sits in the system tray. We're going to talk about different cellular standards. And this is really interesting. I'm not sure if it's testable, but they go back to it in some other chapters. We usually cover it here. So this is kind of interesting and cool. When people started using cell phones, there were few industry-wide standards applying to cell phone technology. Without standards, it was difficult and expensive to make calls to people that were on other networks. Remember those big old brick phones in the bag or built into your car in the early 90s, I think it was? 80s and 90s, and it just cost so much money to make, yeah, to make calls on those phones. Today's cell phone providers,
so much energy they used.
Yeah, they weren't portable. You didn't pull them out of the car. Today's cell phone providers use industry standards, which makes it easier to use cell phones to make calls and a lot cheaper. When the industry started, most cell phone standards were analog. Remember all that static? Hi, are you? I can't see you. Where are you? I can see you. You're two cars behind me. Oh, there you are. Bye.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Today, cell phone standards are mostly digital. Cell phone standards have not been adopted uniformly around the world. Some cell phones are capable of using multiple standards, whereas others can use only one standard. As a result, some cell phones can operate in many countries, and other cell phones can only be used locally. Which generation is which type of thing is on the test, so know the progression of which generation did what, and we'll talk about that here. America is actually quite behind the rest of the world in cell phone technology. We have UMTS over here, and GSM is the standard of most phones over here at the moment. You
like
guys are
GSM
catching up
for the most part.
I remember when it used to really be awful. When I was a teenager, GSM was not something you wanted to use at all.
Most of those because they're fine-tuned the codecs. Gee, this carrot cake is good.
Yay! All right. The first generation 1G of cell phones began service in the 1980s. First generation phones primarily used analog standards, including Advanced Mobile Phone System, AMPS, and Nordic Mobile Telephone, NMT. I remember that. In an analog system, the voice information is sent by varying the radio signals used by the phone in the same pattern as the speaker's voice. Unfortunately, this means that interference and noise, which also vary the signal, cannot easily be separated from the voice in the signal. So you get static and all sorts of artifacts and yeah. Another downside to these systems was that conversations were easily eavesdropped upon because certain scanners would pick up the frequencies used by the phones. Anyone have a shortwave radio and you'd tune into a station and you'd pick up on somebody's cell phone call?
Oh, yeah.
No, they're not shortwave.
No.
They're up in the high megahertz.
Police scan.
Maybe I was picking up on some other stuff, but...
You can get shipped ashore.
Cordless phones are like that too.
Yeah, you get shipped ashore broadcasts, so you can hear all the people talking to their families from the ship to shore. And there were some interesting conversations there. But as my friend adequately put it, you get sick of who's breaking up with who, who's pregnant, and who's going where. So, it does get a bit boring after a while.
Hey, but when you're like 8, you think it's the coolest thing ever.
I remember the days, and this wasn't too long ago, it was about 5 years ago, when with certain phone companies, even with landlines, you can drop in on people's phone calls. Not that you wanted to, it would just happen. If they were close to you.
With the older analog cordless phones, you could.
Yeah, that's what they were on.
Mm. Just use an AM radio and let your parents tell you exactly what you're getting for Christmas.
Absolutely. Digital signals
convert the speaker's voice into a series of ones and zeros. This technology degrades the signal a little because ones and zeros are not faithful representations of your voice. However, the digital signal is robust. It can be fixed using error correction routines if there is interference. Also, digital signals can be compressed, making the system much more efficient than analog. In the 1990s, the second generation, 2G, of cell phones was marked by a switch from analog to digital standards. Now, one thing I'm going to say about the analog signals is they used to be able to travel a lot farther, and they needed a lot less towers. And that is why America kept with the analog as long as they did, because in some country areas, they could go for long ranges. So, that's that. But onto 2G. These were digital standards. Second generation standards include Global System for Mobile, GSM, Integrated Digital Enhanced Network, IDEN, I'm not sure where that was even used, and Code Division Multiplex Access, CDMA.
That's what push-to-talk was, I think.
Oh, okay.
There's a Wikipedia article that tells you about all of these if you look up mobile standards. We all joked that CDMA stood for Consumers Don't Matter Anyway, because the coverage used to be horrible.
No.
The third generation standards...
It's fantastic.
Yeah. But they really get you on the price for it. Verizon is very expensive. Third generation enabled cell phones to go beyond simple voice and data communications. It is now common for cell phones to send and receive text, photos, and videos. It also is common for 3G cell phones to access the internet and to use global positioning systems, GPS. As 3G cell phone standards were being developed, extensions to the existing 2G standards were added. These were transitional standards, are known as 2.5G standards. Fourth generation or 4G standards have been championed by many users in response to the availability of increased data rates. Higher data rates will allow users to download files such as video, music, and faster than what was available with the standards of previous generations. New technologies that add multimedia and networking functionality can be bundled with cell phone standards. These will be listed shortly. Most cell phone providers charge extra for adding these features. Okay. All right. Let's see what this is. And we have a table here that talks about the standards and the difference between them. You may want to look at this before you actually take your quiz. Hold on. There we go. So have a look at this diagram because it's very interesting. I won't actually read it to you because you guys can look at the diagrams just as well as I can. All right. In some ways, preventative maintenance is even more important for laptops than desktops. While your desktops are usually meant to stay in one place, laptops get used everywhere and in all sorts of extremes where desktops are not used. You can hide your desktop tower away. It's in a cupboard. It's not as likely to get spills on it or anything like that. And the temperature is usually the same where a desktop is. Laptops are more delicate. They also have more of an opportunity to be dropped or fall off a table. Have your cat climb all over the keyboard and get cat hair in it.
Walk away because it's open. Because someone decides, hey, shiny laptop.
Yep. We had a friend who sat on somebody's laptop screen. I don't know how she did this. With a desktop, if you knock your can of soda into a keyboard, everything else is okay. You just get a new keyboard or give your keyboard a bath. You do not give a laptop keyboard a bath. this isn't possible with a laptop, because your spill has probably caused serious damage to other things in the case. Keep this kind of thing in mind. Laptops should be clean and used in safe and appropriate environments. Proper routine cleaning is the easiest, least expensive way to protect your laptop and extend its life. And laptops are quite expensive, so you do really want to protect it. It's very important to use the right product for the job. These cleaning procedures are testable. Always read all warning labels on cleaning products. The components are very sensitive and should be handled with care. Consult your laptop manual for additional information and cleaning suggestions. Before performing any cleaning procedure, regardless of what it is, what are we always going to do? There are three things.
Always make sure that the laptop is removed from any, like a power outlet or anything of that nature.
And yep. Turn it off. Unplug it. What else do we need to do?
Take the battery out.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, who does? But you probably should.
What was that?
She said, "Who does?"
A new Mac where you can't.
Yeah, of the laptop when you clean it.
It's very important because if you spill cleaning product in there and there's power, you're done. It's that simple.
Honestly, when I'm cleaning a screen or something, or brushing out my keyboard, I don't, but you're supposed to. If Cisco says you should.
If you're using a wet cleaning solution, you're silly not to take the battery out. If it's a dry cleaning solution or you're brushing, that's fine. But yeah, Windex can finish your laptop off. No problem.
Turn off the laptop, disconnect all attached devices, disconnect the AC adapter, and remove all of the batteries. These procedures, all the procedures say this, and it's almost guaranteed to be on any test on the final, all of that. For the keyboard, clean it by wiping the laptop and the keyboard with a soft, lint-free cloth, lightly moistened with water or screen cleaning solution. There are these keyboard brushes that are great. They're nice and long, and they've got these little hairs, and they clean all the gunk out. Another really good thing that I got was like a $5 little USB, very low-powered vacuum from Zazz, with brushes and little sucky things that go, and that is actually really good, because it's very low-powered, and it's not going to take your keys off. Don't use the Dyson hand vac. That is such a bad idea. For vent cleaning, use compressed air or a special vacuum cleaner for computer use to clean dust and debris from the vent and the fans behind the vents. Do not vacuum the computer with a household vacuum cleaner, or you may lose parts of the laptop, as we said. Cleaning the fan, it can be hard, and there's actually a satirical song called Clean the Fan on YouTube, and it was posted to discuss it. Before we moved. If you listen to this song, it's not work safe and it does cuss, but it's hilarious. So if you're not easily offended, you should totally have a listen because it's really funny. Display should be cleaned with a soft lint-free cloth, moistened with a mild cleaning solution. There are no specific LCD cleaner, There are specific LCD cleaner kits that can be used. You get some for your iPod. Sometimes it comes with your laptop. They'll give you some cleaning wipes. Do not apply cleaner directly.
If you listen to that song, you'll have it in your head for days and days. As I did.
That's true.
It is such
an earworm. Also, there's visuals.
Apparently video. If you can get someone to describe you the video, it's hilarious.
I'm just going to do a search on YouTube and see how hard it is to find. I think it's called Clean the Fan. It should still be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm hoping. Sorry about that.
It's okay. Do not apply cleaning solution directly onto a display. Instead, apply it to the cloth first, then use that to clean the display. Yeah, that's just... Don't do that. Only use products designed for LCD screens. Do not use Windex or glass cleaner. This can damage the coating on the screen. Yeah, I do it anyway. For the touchpad, clean it with a soft cloth and approved cleaner. PDA screens and other portable devices need special care, in part because they're often touch screens, either operated by your fingers or a stylus, and they get nasty. My iPod can get so gross after it being used.
And the iPod ones are pretty good because you can. The iPod ones are pretty easy to wipe off, and they come clean pretty easily. But some of the other ones, like some of the Pocket PCs and stuff, just gross.
Like the iPods are pretty nice really
glass
icky
on the outside.
I don't believe this. It's the Clean the Fan song is now available on iTunes. So if you want it,
wow,
you can get it from iTunes. And
that
I found it on
awesome
YouTube, so that link will turn up in chat in a second.
That's so if you want the Clean awesome the Fan song, get into chat. Okay. Dirt can impair the device's ability to detect stylus taps or movements. I actually had an issue where my iPod was completely going nuts. No idea why, but I had to take off my screen protector and because I was worried that, you know, something was really wrong with it. Apparently a piece of hair had gotten onto it and it was just going nuts. So.
Wow.
Yeah. I have long hair. It gets into everything. And that was no exception. Carrie says that if we ever go to Mars, they'll find my hair there. So, yeah. Dirt can scratch the screen. Clean this with a small amount of a non-abrasive cleaner on a soft, lint-free cloth. You can also wet your finger and just wipe it down as best you can. Use a screen protector that sticks to the screen or another case that covers the screen. As before, apply all cleaners to cleaning cloths, not surfaces to be cleaned. Use a commercially available cleaning kit to clean a floppy disk drive. Floppy drive cleaning kits include pre-treated floppy disks that remove contaminants from the floppy drive heads that can accumulate through normal operation. You can also take your dirty floppy drives to the nearest museum because they are almost useless at this point. Remove all media from the floppy drive, insert the cleaning disks, let it spin for a suggested amount of time. There you go. Dirt, dust, and other contaminants can collect in the optical drive. Contaminated drives can cause malfunctions, missing data, error messages, and lost productivity. Use a commercially available CD or DVD drive cleaning disc. Many floppy disk cleaning kits include an optical disc cleaner as well. Like the floppy disk cleaner, optical disc cleaner kits contain a cleaning solution and a non-abrasive disc that is inserted into the optical drive. Remove all of the media from the optical drive, insert the cleaning disc, and let it spin for the suggested amount of time to clean all contact areas. Cleaning a CD or DVD disc. Inspect the disc for scratches. Replace discs that contain deep scratches because they can create data errors. If you notice problems such as skipping or degrading playback quality with your CDs or DVDs, clean the discs. Commercial products are available that clean discs and provide protection from dust, fingerprints, and scratches. I've heard toothpaste works really well.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Cleaning products for CDs are safe to use on DVDs as well. Hold the disc by the outer edges or by the inside edge. Gently wipe the disc with a lint-free cotton cloth. Pardon me. Never use paper or any materials that can scratch the disc or leave streaks. Wipe from the center of the disc outwards. Never use a circular motion. Apply a commercial CD or DVD cleaner solution to the lint-free cloth and wipe again if any contaminants remain on the disc. Allow the disc to dry before it is inserted into the drive. we're not going to do the troubleshooting process. This is your responsibility. And after the worksheet for Module 4, you should probably know it. If we get time at the end of Module 7, we will ask you guys about the troubleshooting process. But for now, we'll give you a couple more weeks to figure that out. Let's see.
Don't forget about the common solution problems and solutions. Yeah.
Please look at the common troubleshooting sections in this chapter. If you read it carefully, you will get an exam question right that you might otherwise miss, dealing with a display problem. The troubleshooting process is testable, and open-ended and closed-ended questions are testable as well. Review this because it is at the end of every chapter. No excuse to miss it. It's always there. All right. Any questions on this module before we go into a quiz?
I got so sick of that because when I was putting the diagrams in and when my friend was putting them in, he's like, oh, this
we're
again.
Done?
Yeah, we're done. We're done. We went through
45 minutes into the lecture. Wow.
But I think we'll be going on to the next chapter, so
I think
don't
we
get
will.
Excited.
We will be. Yeah,
oh, that
we will
works.
Be going on to the next.
Unless there's something else we want to cover.
And this chapter's fun because it's got sounds, which I'm sure Carrie and Grace are sick of.
It
oh
does.
Boy.
Now, but we are going to have either... We're either going to have time to fill this week or time to fill next week. If anyone has any ideas of what they'd like us to fill that time with, because we will not start Module 8 next week if Sean still has stuff to go on his printer lecture, because that deserves its own lecture. So we want to know... Yeah, it's huge. We want to know if anyone has any suggestions on something they want to cover or want us to cover next week, or if there's something you want to cover this week, so that we don't start Sean off now. That's fine too. But we will have some time to fill, I believe. So think about that.
Are there any burning questions you've had about
any questions
stuff in the
on
curriculum that you've
on the laptop curriculum?
Has anybody lost their thumb drive contents by not safely removing?
Yep.
I haven't yet.
I have. I'll put my hand up. And in fact, I actually had somebody's thumb drive that was actually trashed irrevocably from not safely removing. We never found out why, and it was one of the early ones, but it never came back to life, which was rather disturbing. We tried everything.
Yeah, I've been lucky, but that's one of the things that I try and instill the fear of God in people about for that reason. Because it'll
the
be
other
bad
one,
when
the
you
other
have
message.
That really important thing to do.
The other message that scares the hell out of me, out of Windows, when the balloon comes up and goes, Windows, delayed write failed. Not all of your data has been saved to the disk. And then you start wondering exactly what wasn't saved to the disk. I think Grace is almost ready
the
for
Mac,
this.
The Mac will make you feel guilty for ever even having thought about it. Because the Mac will say, this drive was not ejected properly. Always eject the drive by doing this. And you're like, oh, I'm so
yeah.
sorry.
Windows 7
I've
does
always
that
wondered,
too.
I wondered always, because there are some USB devices that I'd go to remove, and some of them I cannot always find, or it'll say, Windows cannot safely remove this device, even though
yeah,
I'm not
then
even
you
using
shut
it.
The whole computer down. You take the computer and you shut it down.
That is the safest
pain,
thing to do.
If you, that is the, because it will, it has to have written all of it then. Grit your teeth, take, you know, the extra minute or so it takes to shut the computer down. If your data is that valuable to you, shut it down. I've done it at work before, and yes, it wastes time, but I'd like to keep my
files.
Yeah,
because I've always wondered, you know, and sometimes some of the devices aren't visible, but like, for example, a sound card. I have a Sound Blaster card, and it's a USB, and I wanted to unplug it, but all I
that
kept seeing
I think
were the storage devices.
That I think you would probably just pull.
If you want the actual answer, and this actually is kind of handy, if you actually go into the device properties, and this is advanced, so we're not expecting everybody to do this, but if you go into device properties, find the device and go to the Details tab, and if you find a thing that says Supports Surprise Removal, and that is set to 1, you can just rip it out. And yes, I can tell you from experience.
They call it that?
Yes, Surprise
That's
Removal.
Awesome!
Wow!
Cool!
The other thing is that with the sound cards, as long as you're not playing sound on the card at the time you rip it out, it's pretty safe to remove it. Otherwise, bad things TM happen, and your jaws and whatever else you're running on that card will fall over and go horribly bad.
Ow. Yeah, about that.
Well, that's good to know.
I've started trying to do the eject device thing in Ubuntu, and for some reason it always says unable to stop drive or whatever when I do this with... With, you know, typical pin drives or thumb drives or whatever. 100% of the time it says unable to stop the drive.
You gotta unmount them first.
You might have to try a more traditional unmounting command or something.
I have a quick question. My computer is, right now, when I go to push, like, something on the keyboard, JAWS is saying control numlock on or control numlock off. It's not allowing me to do certain computer commands. Is there a button I may have inadvertently pushed to make it do this? Like when I push the numlock key, it'll say control numlock off or control. I'm like,
your
that's
control
weird.
Is your scroll lock on? Actually.
Ooh, what key is that one?
It is the right-hand key in the group of three up the top to the right of the function keys, depending on your keyboard layout. The other thing is that sometimes you just get a sticky control key. And it happens on machines that are low memory, slower, older operating systems. Sometimes you can unload and reload JAWS and that'll fix it. Otherwise, it's reboot
Sometimes
time.
If you tap both control keys quickly,
or you
know,
tap the controls
pretty
yeah.
quickly, they'll
That usually fixed back. It for me when I had that.
This was really bad in some of the older JAWS.
Okay.
Know,
I would also have
tapping
issues
of both
where
control keys fixed it.
Usually it was letters would just randomly stop working, and unloading and reloading JAWS fixed that, but
yeah.
It was weird.
I've never really had that happen before. Yeah, Alt will sometimes do that. But yeah, both the control keys, I hit them together and they seem to fix the problem.
Shall we do a quiz?
Alright. Anything else?
Is the quiz not at the end of those notes?
Do a quiz.
Or did it get put there? It should be there.
No, Grace was just being patient, I think.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I'm just stretching my arms.
For a minute I thought maybe you were having trouble finding...
Telling one of our other students that they should probably come to lecture if they're bored and depressed, and that setting up Ventrilo is a 2-minute job, and now I'm done. Look at the top of my time. Look at the top of my timeline, and you'll see who it was.
Oh, righto.
And yeah, it was a public tweet, so I'm not saying anything anyone didn't know, and won't know if they don't look at the top of my timeline. All right. All right. Question one: which two features make laptops a good alternative to desktop computers? Choose two. Oh, let's make sure everybody's in chat. Yeah, we're all good. Oh, thanks. Thanks, Alex. All right. Here we go. Choose two, so this is a yes or no. Compact design? That is correct. Lower costs? That's right, that is no. What in the world is going on with this thing? Oh, I see. Someone just made a mistake on there. Alright. Enhanced capabilities? Nope. Portability? Absolutely. Congratulations, you all get a cookie. Alright. Which laptop device is commonly hot swappable? Is it A, display, B, internal hard drive, C, PC card, or D, RAM? Choose now. C is right, absolutely. Be pretty funny if you could just pop off a display and, you know, screw another one on. Alright. Refer to the exhibit, which three ports are identified as A, B, and C in the graphic. Choose three. Find the actual... Oh, I see how we do this. All right. So, you're going to... our choices are A, modem, B, network port, C, parallel port, D, PS2 port, E, serial, F, VGA. So, I'm going to describe a few ports, and you are going to tell me what these ports are, because I can see the labeled ports, and you guys can't. Alright, so this one is a long, flat female port. It would have about 25 pins. It's probably on the back of a computer.
And if you can't remember least, the letters, you could just type what the port is.
Yeah, you just tell us. The letters are. Just tell us what you think it is. Yeah. It has two... That is not a VGA port.
No VGA port has 25 pins.
Still describe.
It's parallel. It is parallel. Good job. Virtual lollipop.
You didn't actually tell everybody to answer, which is why very few people had
actually
answered.
Yeah, that's fine. Well, I'll tell you when to answer next time. All right, it's parallel. Good job. All right, we have a round little port. This port is also female. I believe it has six pins. And it could be on the side of a laptop, most likely. Not that it really matters, because it could basically be anywhere. Round, six-pin, small port. Answer now. PS2. Great job.
That was awesome.
All right. You have another female port again. This port is 15 pins in three rows of five. It has the little screw things to screw down the port. And you can answer now. All right. Good job. And since we're having so much fun, we're just going to do the rest of these to give you guys more practice. All right. This is a small port, and it isn't really, I guess you'd call it female, but it's not like the other ports we had. It's more squarish, and it has a little retaining clip, but it's quite small. It's maybe about a little less, maybe 3/8 of an inch. It's not quite half an inch, and it's quite small. Modem. That's a modem port. All right, good job, guys. Let's see. And the last one is another port. It is rectangular, a bit bigger than the port that we last looked at. Also has a retaining clip, and four pins. What's that? Ethernet network port. Yes, that's absolutely right. Well done, guys. And you may get somebody who describes those as badly as I do or worse on the A+ exam. So you have to get used to hearing terrible descriptions. There you go. I had an instructor that was doing my A+ training with me who tried to describe the diagrams as badly as he possibly could, because he figured I'd probably get like the cleaning lady to describe diagrams, and that was fun. Okay, any questions on those diagram ones? Okay. Which type of memory is used in laptops? Is it A, DIMM, B,
RIM, C, SIM, or D, SODIM. Choose now. And those of you who said D are absolutely right. Well done. If they were in the same question, they would point out that the modem was smaller. Otherwise, you really wouldn't. You would have to pick one of the two options. Because most of the time, modem and Ethernet are not put in the same question for that reason. If they are, someone will point out to you that one is smaller. Which power management control was introduced prior to advanced configuration and power interface? A. ACCI, B. ACPI, C. AMD, D. APM, or E. APA. Choose now. D is right. Absolutely, that's APM. 6. What do FireWire, and USB what do FireWire and USB devices have in common? A. Only one of these devices can be used at a time. B. They are considered hot-swappable devices. C. They cannot be used with desktop PCs. D. They are parallel communications devices. Choose now. B is absolutely right. Well done. What should a user do when operations on a USB memory device have been completed and it is necessary to remove it from the laptop computer? A. Reboot the computer. B. Choose Start, Control Panel, System, select the USB device and then the Properties tab. Click Remove. C. Click the Safely Remove Hardware icon in the Windows System Tray. D. Just remove the USB device from the computer. Choose now. C is right, guys.
One of the things I like about 7 is that when you do that, it refers to the drive not just by safely remove USB mass storage device drive X. It'll actually say eject store and go, for example, is my work drive. So if you know the actual device name of your drive, it makes it really easy to be sure that you are connecting the correct one. If you've got two thumb drives connected, which sometimes I do.
Which two steps are recommended when cleaning a laptop LCD screen? Choose two. A. Clean the display screen using tissue moistened with water. No, that is not a lint-free solution. B.
And it's not applicable either.
No. B. Disconnect all devices attached to the laptop prior to cleaning the display screen. Absolutely. D. Remove all sources of power from before cleaning the display remove all sources of power after cleaning the display screen. Grace can't read. That is a no. Remove the LCD screen from the laptop. No.
That can be rather difficult to do.
Power off the laptop prior to cleaning the display screen. Yes.
Did you say power up or power off?
Power off. Power off.
Oh, oops.
That's okay. All right.
I thought you said power off. That's why I said no.
Yeah, fair enough. What is the easiest, least expensive way to extend the life of a laptop and keep it in optimal working order? Is it A. Replace parts regularly? B. Clean the laptop regularly? C. Do a clean and reinstall of the OS? D. Backup important information monthly? Choose now. And B is correct. How would a technician determine which key to press in conjunction with the FN key to connect a laptop to an external projector? Is it A. Access Microsoft Office Online Help?
B, locate the key with the monitor image imprint. C, access system BIOS help by pressing the key that is associated with help. D, use the help menu options for the particular application that is active. Choose now. B is absolutely correct. 11.
Windows
which power
7
mode?
Has a nice little thingy, though,
Go
called
ahead.
Connect to a projector with Windows P that's pretty useful. And sometimes you can trick a laptop into turning off the screen with this one by telling it you have a projector connected and then choosing Keep Changes. Because it'll say, I don't think there is one, but it works on mine beautifully. Although JAWS connect a bit funny sometimes. But if you don't want people to see your work, it's...
Which power mode turns the CPU off, but the RAM is still being refreshed? Is it A, S0, B, S1, C, S2, D, S3, E, S4, or F, S5? Choose now. The people who said C did really well. Good job, guys. Way to go remembering your power states. What Windows Vista laptop power plan saves open documents and applications to a temporary file on the hard drive, with the result that it takes longer to bring the computer back to a usable condition? A. Deep hibernation. B. Hibernate. C. Hybrid sleep. D. Sleep. Choose now. B. Hybrid sleep is only available in Windows 7. Now, hybrid sleep does two things. It keeps the temporary information in RAM, and it backs it up to a hard drive. So if one fails, the other can pick it up. It takes a little longer to boot than a regular sleep, but it does not take as long as hibernation unless things have crashed.
There's another wrinkle. You cannot hibernate if you have more than 3 gig of RAM. That is a Microsoft limitation.
4 gig of RAM.
Yeah, I'll have to check that. Because it actually says it takes longer to retrieve the hibernation from disk than it would to actually boot the computer.
Okay. Which three components can often be removed while power is still applied to the laptop? Choose three. A. It says yes or no. Is it battery? No. How about an express card? Yes. External optical drive? Absolutely. Internal hard drive? No, absolutely not. RAM? No. And flash drive. Yes. Okay. A person is unable to connect to the home wireless network of a friend. The wireless network fails to appear as a network. The laptop is in the same room as the access computer point. The wireless NIC is enabled. What is a possible solution to this problem? A. Attach the AC adapter. B. Remove unused devices. C. Configure the SSID and any security settings manually. D. Attach an external wireless antenna and configure the wireless NIC to use it instead of the internal one. Choose now. C. C is absolutely right. Now,
this
I have a tip.
One that we didn't necessarily talk about, but it's probably in that common solutions thing that we talked about.
I have a tip.
Exactly where that came from.
There's a question you're going to get, and it isn't in this chapter, but it's about wireless. When you are troubleshooting with somebody, don't assume anything. Don't assume they have done anything. Always only take the information that is given to you. So they have tried nothing else but what is given, the information that is given to you in a question. If you think of that when you do these troubleshooting questions, you'll get them right.
But if you assume even the smallest thing, you will end up getting them wrong. And that's an important thing to remember with the A-plus practical applications, because there is one question that's coming up here in one of the exams that will get you if you assume anything.
Oh dear.
So don't. Read the information that you've been given and then look at the choices you have. An infrared device fails to appear under the infrared hardware tab. Which task would resolve this issue? A. Move the device closer to the receiver. B. Enable infrared in device manager. C. Enable infrared broadcast on the device. Or D. Remove the protective covering from the infrared device access window. Choose now. A is right. Move the device closer. Alright guys, you've finished your quiz.